Okay, today's topic, as we look at Perek Yud Chet of Shoftim, continues with the discussion we had last week of Pesel Micha, which is a discussion, as you know, about an individual, strangely, who created his own idolatry and along with other items that go along with it, and he hired a Levi to be his Kohen, to be his priest. And he had like a private kind of temple of Avodah Zarah. Of course, we considered the fact that maybe he just used it as an intermediary. It wasn't really Avodah Zarah, kind of like the golden calf. Some had that discussion about, if you recall. But ultimately, we're going to see that many hold it really was real, actual Avodah Zarah. We also saw Rav Dessler in a beautiful discussion about how this occurred, how Moshe Rabbeinu had made a vow that the first child that he would have would go toward Avodah Zarah. As strange that sounds, we can't get into it again now, but if you look back on that previous lesson, you'll see that. And Rav Dessler then pointed out that this can happen to anyone. As you see, even the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, as we will see today, that's who this is. We already gave that information last week. We're continuing now with Perek Yud Chet, and we'll see that, in a sense, it gets even worse and more strange and more unbelievable. Okay, it says, "Bayamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael, b'yamim ahem shevet hadani mevakesh lo nachala l'shevet kilo nafla lo ad hayom ahu b'toch shivtei Yisrael b'nachala." So it says, in those days, when again there was no king in Israel, and the commentators have various things they say about this, either, again, it's going back to the idea that you could have this Avodah Zarah, this idolatry taking place, and no one tries to confront it, or it says that, that Dan had no inheritance, and we know in fact he did have an inheritance, but apparently the Amorites still inherited his land. They could not totally drive them out. If there would have been a king already that would succeed to help the tribe of Dan to drive them out. So there are different views about what this means, but apparently the tribe of Dan, or some say, I forgot to say, that they needed more land because they didn't have enough for all the people that they had, so they needed even more land. So they're searching for more land. Vayishlechu b'nei Dan mimishpachtam chamisha nashim. So they sent out five individuals from the tribe of Dan, miksotam anashim b'nei chayil, and some of them were also army soldiers, mitzara u'mieshtael, from these places, meshtol, liragel et haaretz, in order to spy out the land. Sound familiar? Spy out the land. So you know maybe something, I'm just saying maybe, something could be happening here that's not going to be so kosher, because we know when you say talk about the spies, you know there are other cases of spies too with Yeshua and so on, but with the 12 spies, we know the terrible circumstances that took place thereafter. Ula Chokra, they were sent to investigate. Vayomer Alehem Lechu Chikru Et Haaretz, so they said to these five individuals, go and search out the land. Vayavo Har Ephraim Ad Beit Micha. And so they came into Har Ephraim, to the house of Micha, and they slept there. Okay. Hema im Beit Micha, behema hikiru et kol hanar halevi. They were there in the house of Micha, and they recognized the voice of this young boy, this Levi, who was taken, right, to become the Kohen of the idol house, brothel, whatever, of Micha. V'yasuru sham v'yomru lo mi aviyacha halom u'ma ata oseh bazeh u'ma l'cha po. So they were shocked. They said, what do you do? What brought you to this place? And what are you doing here? Right? What are you doing here? What are you doing? Why are you here? V'yomer aleihem kazo v'chazeh. Interesting language. He told them this and that. Asalir Micha told me about this and that. Vayishkareini, and he paid me v'yahilo l'kohen. And I said, I'd be here as a result. I'd be his priest. Okay, so I did it for the money. I did it for the money. Now, you know, as crazy as this sounds, and we'll see later how it's really not so crazy, some of you may know that there was a time in American Jewish history when there were Orthodox rabbis who took jobs at non-Orthodox synagogues, especially conservative synagogues, not so much Reform, but that was already too far. But conservative synagogues, there are many, including this town, by the way, there are many people who are Orthodox rabbis, and they felt like they couldn't get jobs, so they figured, okay, so what's this lacking? At the time, conservative Judaism just didn't have a machitza for the most part. Maybe they had a microphone, but they were pretty traditionalist in nature. So there were a whole group of people who did this. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik even permitted it not in terms of conservative shuls, but in an approach which he called kibush kihilot, which some say actually originated with Rav Belkin, but the thought was that there weren't a lot of Orthodox synagogues there. There were a lot of people in America who didn't know what they were doing. And maybe if we get an Orthodox rabbi into the synagogue, so people are just ignorant. They just don't know. Like again, my grandparents went to a conservative synagogue. They started an Orthodox synagogue. Okay, they were basically Orthodox, you know, for most of their lives. And then, okay, they landed one in St. Louis, one in Quincy, Illinois. So suddenly you're Orthodox, and there's only a Reformed temple or conservative, so you don't become Orthodox anymore. It's not like they were against Orthodoxy. So if you have the right rabbi there, maybe he can connect himself to them. Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Yindich, many people in this shul were not what you call hardcore Orthodox. Rabbi Yindich connected to those people and allowed them to continue here. So this is the case here, this individual. So he took money in order to be the Kohen for Micha. And again, some still argue, did he really do it with idolatry in mind? Or do you say, okay, look, I got to make a living, so it's not what I would want, but I'm going to do it, and I'll have in mind serving God, or something like that. Yes.
I understand Rabbi Berlov mentioned my uncle, Myron Mosky, who went to YU and was a rabbi, and he decided to be rabbis in conservative shuls so as to influence people
right.
to be Orthodox.
Right.
I mean, he always lived near the shul, he always walked, he always was kosher, he never did anything that was a chilul Hashem. He had to move a lot because every time they wanted a microphone, I mean, he would never
right.
put up with that kind of
right.
thing. One of the people he influenced into becoming Orthodox actually was a member of our shul at one point in time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he influenced a lot of people. Yeah. He influenced a lot of people in that way and helped them move along because, like you said, in those days, conservative wasn't really that
right.
far. You were
right.
allowed to sit together and you were allowed to drive to show and back and that was it.
Right.
Everything
right.
else you were supposed to take
right.
care of.
Right.
And,
so,
you know, that was his choice.
Right. Now, by the way, I didn't add that Rav Soloveitchik's main thing was he said if you took such a shul, there were certain conditions. It's been spelled out by different rabbis who took such shuls. Like
mm-hmm.
Rabbi Riskin took such a shul, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions was that he, as he lists them in his book, various books, he says, number one, he wasn't allowed to daven at the shul where he was the rabbi. Now, I don't know if all these people did this, mm-hmm. but he said, Soloveitchik said, you daven ahead of time. You go there, you're kind of like a teacher. You help running the thing. You give a sermon. You teach. But you can't daven there. And he made it known to them, if you hire me, he said, it sounds crazy. Who would hire such a guy? Okay, I'll be glad to be a rabbi. I can't daven with you. Can you imagine that? So if he can't daven, okay. What other things was he not allowed to do? It was only a few years, by the way. He had to take it on a condition, let's say, that if in 2 or 3 years, whatever it is, they don't, you have to vote to put up machitza, and if they don't, you have to leave. And this Ravada rabbis fell because they're already there, they're already, you know, built into the shul, and they'll become a rav, and then now they take the vote, it doesn't go, well, I'm staying, I need a parnasa. But it was with certain rules, that's all pointing out.
I don't have
that's correct also. No, that's right. Rabbi, you're right. No salary. They weren't allowed to take salary. That's different than this, right? So imagine you can't take a salary. It's totally kiruv oriented, totally to, you know, but people should know, in a sense, they're not even paying you to be their rav. In a sense, you're not their rav. You're there to help them get to the right place. You know? So, okay. So
how does that work financially with a family?
No, so in that case, Rabbi Riskin, I think, wasn't married yet, for example, when he did it. This was, okay, and he made this deal. Eventually, he got married. They put up machitza. Of course, he was very successful. And then, of course, he had many thousands of families. Whatever. But that's how it worked.
Rabbi Riskin and
yeah.
the others.
Right. So, okay, so this is what happened, right? So this is what he tells them. What do they say? Now, you think this is the tribe of Dan. They hear this and go, what, you nuts? You crazy? What do you mean? You started a house of Vodazara? What, we're going to kill you, right? No. By Yom Rulo, Sha'al Nav Elohim V'neida HaTatzliach Darkeinu Asher Anachnu Hochim Aleha. Oh, okay. So please ask God and let us know if we'll be successful in doing what we're trying to do to find more land for our tribe. Now, you could take this in two ways. You could say they're saying, really ask God. After all, you're a Kohen, so ask God for us. Or, as most take it, they really meant, okay, so, oh, you're the priest in the Avodah Zarah home here? Go use your elements with the powers that be, Elohim, right? Which we said earlier last week, that the Beit Elohim of Micha means, according to some, the house of idolatry of Micha. Okay, so go and ask, and let's see if we're going to be successful. Vayomer lahem ha-kohen, and the Kohen said to them, Lechu l'shalom, nochach Hashem, Darchechem asher halachuva. Again, two understandings here. One says that they said to him, that he said to them, yes, go in peace with God, right? On the path that you're going. In other words, you're going to be successful. Yes, you're going in peace. You're going in completeness and fullness, as Shalom means, okay? The other view says, I see the majority view, it says, no, here we use the name Hashem, not Elohim, okay, to mean that I'm not going to go ask my gods at all, okay? Go with Hashem. What I'm doing, I have to do for certain reasons, all right? You go and you go ask Hashem. Do not even come in this place. He tried to, in a sense, drive them away from being involved. He has a certain heter, if you will, a certain leniency, because he has to make a parnasa, but that doesn't mean that you should go astray from the beliefs of the Jewish people. Move now on to Pasuk Yud Zayin. Verse 17, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, so we go on a little bit. Vayalu chamishat ha'anashim ha'olchim l'ragel et ha'aretz ba'u shama lakhu et ha'pesel v'yat ha'ifod v'yat ha'trofim v'yat ha'masecha v'yakohen nitzav petach ha'shar v'sheish me'ot ha'ish hechagur kulam kalei milchama. So what happens? So he goes out. They go back to the house of Micha after going around a little bit, and they come in and they take the idols, and they take the trafim, and they take the special garment that was there. They take all the paraphernalia for Avodah Zarah. All right, they take it. And it says then going on, Ve'ela ba'u beit micha v'yikhu et pesa ha'ifon v'atrafim v'atrafim v'yamalayim ha'kohen ma'atem osim. So they took it. He says, what are you doing? The Kohen says, what are you doing? Ve'yomu lo hecheresh simyadcha picha. Says, quiet. Put your hand over your mouth. Ve'lech imanu. Come with us. Ve'yalanu la'avu l'kohenat. And you'll be our leader. And you'll be our priest. And then he says, Hatov hayotcha kohen levet ish echad. Oh, yotcha kohen leshevet lemishmacha b'Yisrael. You want to be a rabbi of a small shul or a large shul? What do you want to? You want to be the kohen of this little shtibel of Micha's place, or you want to be the shtibel of all of Dan? You could be the priest. Okay, so. Vayitev Leva Kohen, he says, oh, that sounds good. He's just doing for money anyway. Okay, nice.
He wasn't really a Kohen. Does that
He wasn't a Kohen, no. He's from the tribe of Levi. He's not a Kohen anyway.
Okay.
So he never did anyone get paid so much for not being the authentic person. He's not even... Vayikach et ha'efod, v'yatrafim, v'yatapesel, v'yavu v'kerbam. Okay, good idea. I'll go with you. Okay. Vayifnu v'yelchu, v'yasimu et ha'taf, v'yatabimikne, v'yatakvudal epneihem. They went and they put all their families in front of them. Hema yirchiku mibeit micha, and they went away from the house of Micha, Anashim Asher Babatim Asher Imbeit Micha Nizaku Biad Biku Ed Bnei Dan. And the people who were there with Bnei Micha, they went after them and tried to attach themselves to them and overcome them. Vayikruel Bnei Dan, and they cried out to Bnei Dan, Vayasibu Bneihem, and they turned around, Vayomru L'Micha, and they said to Micha, Malacha Ki Nizakta. What are you screaming about? What are you yelling about? What are you so angry about? Vayomer Vayomer et Elohei et Elohai Asher Asiti Lakachtem. Whoa. You took the God that I made, Bira Kohen and my priest, Latelchu, and you left. Umaliod Umazet Tomru Eli Malach. He said, I now have nothing left at all, and you're asking me, what's the matter with you? What are you yelling about? What are you screaming about? What do you mean, what are you screaming about? You took everything I had. Don't raise your voice to us. Don't your voice be heard. Look, you know, we got a lot of people here with weapons. They're going to come. They'll destroy you. You know what? You better just back away, as we would say, right? Back away. Vayelchu b'nei Dan l'darkam. So b'nei Dan just went on their way. Vayar Micha ki chazakim heima. Yeah, and Micha saw they were very strong and mighty. stronger than him, Emmanuel. Vayifens, he turned around. Vayashov El Beito, he went back home. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? He went back home. You're right. All right, they never chance. Vahemalach hu et asher asah michad, he took everything he had, and Akohen asher hayalo, and Akohen, Vayavoa El Laish, they came to the city of Laish, Alam Shoket, and upon a quiet village of people who were there, Boteach Viyaku, and a secure people, the Yaku Otam, and they destroyed them, fought them Lafichara by the sword, Vietair, Sarfuba Ash, then they destroyed the city. Vematil Ki Rechoka hi mitzidon Vidavari Lahem Imadam Vihiba Amekasher Levaid Rachov Vivnu Etair Vayeshuva. And then they had them, no one could hear them, it was in a secluded place, and no one whether other people could hear their screams or could hear the war going on, and therefore they were just left there to die, and the Danites took over the city. Vaygru Shem Ha'ir Dan Bishem Dan Avihem. So they called the city Dan, after the name of their father, Shayul Yisrael, the Ulam Yayish Shema Yil Shanaba, this first called Yayish. But Yakimu Lahem B'nei Dan et HaPesel, and they established there the Pesel, that the idol, Vionatan Ben Gershon Ben Mansha, who Uvanav, Hayukoani Mashevet Hadani Arayom Glutaritz. And then this individual we're talking about, the young Levi, whose name is Yonatan, the son of Gershon, the son of, it looks like Menashe, but it's an N, what they call a Nun Teluyah, it's a hanging Nun, could be read Moshe. And that's indeed, as we said last week, they said this is Yonatan, the son of Gershon, the son of Moshe. Why is he called in Menashe? Why is the Nun put in there? Okay, why if he's the son of Moshe? Because he did the things like Menashe. King Menashe was someone who brought the Jewish people to worship idols. So therefore we call him the son of Menashe. Like he's an idolater, this person. Okay, on the other hand, we leave the Moshe and it's put at the end, they say. Why isn't it put at the very beginning? Why didn't we identify this person way back, you know, at the very beginning of the story? So there are two reasons. One is because of his sins, we want to keep him anonymous. No one should know who he is. Secondly, they say, because we don't want to embarrass Moshe. We don't, you don't have to say it yet. You know, you at the very end, kind of sneak it in. Maybe some people leave early. You know, they won't hear it. Okay. So they took all the stuff with them. They're in Dan now, and they're establishing their own temple. It sounds like a Avodah Zarah in Dan. And it says, this continued until the exile from the land. They asked me some questions there. This continued into the exile from the land. When was the exile from the land? What year? Anyone recall? Okay, 586 before the Common Era. So according to that, so if that's when it happened, you already had kings and everything. So people asked, Mefarshim asked, what do you mean? You mean David HaMelech didn't do anything about this? And Shlomo HaMelech, they just let it go? They just let it go? They knew there was a patient place of Avodah Zarah and they just let it go? Because it said earlier there was no king in Israel. Okay, so this could happen. But then you had kings in Israel. Why didn't they stop it? So some say that David HaMelech did stop it, but then after he died, it came back again. Why didn't Shlomo stop it? Shlomo Melech would later marry the daughter of Paro and himself be distracted by women and his own idolatrous kind of elements. So therefore, he kind of let it go. Shlomo Melech let it go, even as he's going to build the temple, as strange as that sounds. Some say Galut Haaretz means a later time. Anyway, it's a question about exactly what this means. Okay, and then it goes on to say, Vayasimu lahem et pesel micha asher asah kol yamei heyot beit ha'elohim b'shiloh. And again, they had it there the whole time when, sounds like here before the temple, when you had the Bama, the high place of Shiloh, this whole time, right, you still had this worship of micha. It says, by the way, of the pesel micha, it says here at the end, and this continued all the way when you had the house of God in Shiloh. Now earlier, don't forget, the house of God last week meant Beit Micha, but here it says Beit, the Mefarshim point out Beit Ha Elohim, the house of God, not just a house of God or a house of this power, the house of God. And with this we have the end of today's story. Now the question is, however, okay, how could the son of Moshe Rabbeinu, we discussed last week, we said, the Mitzvah Eliyahu said, listen, this shows you that anyone can come to worship idols, anyone can go off the derech, anyone can become someone who rejects Jewish tradition, even if you got great parents and grandparents. Moshe Rabbeinu, the top idea here, right? Someone was recently talking to me about their son, Trappin, who intermarried, and they're very upset, and they were talking to me, and they said, no, we always kept this, we always kept that, we always did this, always did that, what we should do. I said, I gave them, because I just studied this. They just asked me last week, and I said, listen, I told them the whole story of Pesel Micha. And I said, Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson, I said, you know, he's going to worship idols now. What is going on here? What is going on? Right? But you see, it can happen to anyone, the Mifta Meliyahu says. It's possible. Well, it can happen. You can't control a person's free will. Let's look at this idea. How does the Gemara, there's a Gemara in Baba Batra, Daf Kuf Yud, which deals with this situation. When it said, V'asuru Shava Yomru Lo, it said earlier we had, if you recall, when they first said, oh, we recognize the voice of this lady, who is he? They said, what are you doing here? How'd you get here? What are you doing? What's going on? All right? So he answered them, right, that he paid me. He said he paid me a good price to be the Kohen. So what's going on here? So the Gemara says this. Listen to what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, they said, they're extending upon what he said. They said, Miha Yacha Halom, who brought you here? Matal Sebazeh, what are you doing with this? Umalachapa, what are you doing here? Amru, well, they're saying this. Lav Moshe Ka'atik, wait a minute. We know you. Don't you come from Moshe? Aren't you from Moshe? Kifdichkiv Bey Al Tikrav Halom. If the word halom is used here, I guess don't come here.
The burning
further.
Bush.
Right. Don't come further.
Yeah.
So by the burning bush also it said don't come any further. So they're connecting this to Moshe at the burning bush. So we have to understand what that means, but that's what's one thing he says. Then it says, Lav Moshe Ka'atit. Again, don't you come from Moshe? Dichtiv Bey. Again, they said, the second thing they said to him was, Ma Atal Sebazeh. And also by the burning bush, it says, Ma zeh biyadcha. What is this in your hand? Right? Remember the staff? What is this in your hand? Okay? And then they asked him, Lav Moshe Ka'atit. And again, where it says here, when they finally said, what are you doing, Po? Okay? By Moshe Rabbeinu, it says there in Devarim, Vata Po Amuri Madi. You stand up here with me, Moshe, at Har Sinai. Okay? So all these things, this is what they were asking him. Yachshav Taseh Kohen or Komer says Avorah Kochavim. You who had Moshe Rabbeinu do all these things, you became an idolatrous priest. Amar Lahem Kach Mikubablani Mibeit Avi, Avi Abba. Listen to this, Mibeit Avi Abba. This is what I received as a tradition from my grandfather, from Moshe Rabbeinu. Leolam Yaskir Adam Atzmo LaAvodah Zarah. Let a person always even rent himself out, right, to make money in idolatry, v'lo yitzarech libriot, and let him not need to go around begging for money from other people. Let him do even idolatry, and let him not go and have to beg. Now, there are a lot of beggars around today who seem like they don't follow this, and I'll tell you why. One second. The Gemara says he made a mistake. That the Gemara in Baba Batra says that when the limud from the house of Moshe Rabbeinu, Avodah Zarah can mean Avodah Zarah, idolatry, or it can mean a strange work, Avodah Zarah, do something strange. Mm-hmm. They meant to say, he said, the tradition he had, he misunderstood, was that even if you have to, let's say, even if you're a rabbi, whatever, and you have to make a living, so there are no rabbi jobs. So you're going to have to work at a business. You're going to have to go sweep floors, whatever. You can work at a gas station. Please, you have to make money. You got to make a living. So even though that's strange work to you, but still, you got to go do it. Better to do that than to go begging. Okay? So that's what he meant. And he thought it meant better to get paid for even doing a Avodah Zarah and not to go ask. Instead of doing a work that you're not used to, it's better to do a service, even to Avodah Zarah, he learned. And that was his mistake. And that's what led him to do Avodah Zarah. He misunderstood. Now, let's look at some of the commentators on this in the Iyun Yaakov and also in the Marsha, and then also the Ben Yehoyada, okay, about this situation. First of all, just in terms of the general idea, so the Marasha says, when it said, V'atapo amodi madi, we said, how can you be here when you were, Moshe was told, your grandfather, stand here with me, in the presence of God, and you're in the presence of idolaters. So he says that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was so close to God, that God said, stand here with me. What do you mean stand here with me? God's everywhere and far away, and you could stand here with me, right? He said that about your grandfather, they were telling him, right? That's how close he came, and yet, look how far you are. Okay, that you're worshiping idols. He was so close to Hashem, like you almost touch him, and you are so far from Hashem. Okay, so that's one statement the Marsha says is being indicated here. Now, the Iyun Yaakov has an amazing explanation. Let me read this to you. It's amazing. He says, Al Dada Midrash Efshar Lomar Bishum Diyesh Lomar Da Adarabah. He says, listen. He says, I could say just the opposite. They're saying to him, how could you be here? How could you be here? You are a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. How could you be here? By the way, they later take it and serve the testimony for himself. But Don, I guess, I don't know if they're asking just facetiously. How, we still don't understand it. Oh, we're one thing, but you. You're from the offspring of Moshe Rabbeinu. How could it be? So the Iyun Yaakov says, Adarabah, just the opposite. Ho'il v'ka'atit m'moshe. They could have said this. You know what? You come from Moshe. Vinasa Isha She'ena Hoganet Lo Bat Yitro. Moshe married a woman who really wasn't fit for him. Now, I never really hear this type of critique of Tzipporah. No, I mean, she circumcised the child, and she seemed to be committed to Yiddishkeit and everything. Obviously, she converted to whatever degree. But he married a woman that really wasn't for him, the Bat Yitro. Yitro was from Eretz, from Israel, and he had worshipped various idols before he came around. Okay? Lakach rawi litzeit mimenu banim ka'elu. You would have been fitting. It shouldn't have been such a surprise that you should have a grandson who went to Avodah Zarah. After all, Yitro was originally a priest to Avodah Zarah. I mean, he's just saying this, okay? Then he goes, Ach be'emet zarich litein tam, lama be'emet Moshe Adon kol hanevi'im v'chachamim, eich asakein. You know, we really got to give a reason. Why did Moshe marry the daughter of Yitro? Why? Why did you get married? Why can't you say, I'm going to go back? Why do you have to marry the daughter of Yitro? That wasn't fitting. Yesh lomar, Shemeit Hashem hayitazot. You have to say that this was from God, that he should marry the Tzipor, the daughter of Yitro. Why was it from God? Lefisha galui v'yadua sha'atid lifrosh min ha'isha. Listen to this. He says, because in the future we know, Parsha Palotcha, right? It says that we know Aaron and Miriam criticized Moshe because he separated from his wife. Because he had to be with God all the time in a state of impurity. Again, anyone else who would do this, we'd say, you can't do that. What do you mean? We believe in Judaism, you're supposed to be married. You're supposed to be with your wife. You're supposed to be with your spouse. You're supposed to have a family, right? But no, one exception in the history of Judaism, unless you want to say Ben Azai, Taraso Naso, the Gemara says, but generally speaking, Moshe, okay, so he had a certain status, a certain holiness, where he had to be totally involved in spiritual things, he couldn't have direct relations at a certain point, he had to be separated from his wife, okay, and Al Pi Ritzu Yakadosh Baruch Hu, and this was eventually God's will. V'ein Nachon Again Bat Yisrael HaHogenet, and it would have been right if Moshe married a Jewish woman, and then he would have to separate from her, and she would be left an aguna, a woman who was all alone now and couldn't get married. That wouldn't have been right, and that's why he married a daughter of Yitro, who was inappropriate for him. Can you believe this? Who was inappropriate for him, because since eventually he would have to separate from her, so it might be a daughter of Yitro that he separates from, and not a daughter of Israel. That, I just thought I'd read you that, because I wouldn't read this in all circles. I just think it's just wild. Wow. And now just let me point out something else. He says, he brings in a medrash that says, and I'll prove to you this was God's will that he married Tzipora. Did you ever hear this medrash? I never heard it, but it sounds like, you'll see in a moment, it says, you know the staff? Where do you get the staff? I know you got the staff from Yitro says, go take care of the sheep. You gave him a staff. No. He said there was a staff in his garden, like a piece of wood, if you will. And it was, and Yitro always said, this Medrash says, whatever man shall pull out the staff, right, he shall marry my daughter. Like who?
King Arthur,
right? Exactly. Yeah, what, Lancelot or King Arthur? Right.
Excalibur.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Excalibur. So that's exactly what it was. Moshe goes, he pulls it out, and then you get Tzipora. So the Mateh was a proof that this is Midas Shemayim. He's supposed to marry Tzipora, because otherwise, how could he pull it out? No one could pull it out. It was impossible. God gave him the strength because he wanted him to marry Tzipora. So you can't blame Moshe Rabbeinu. This was what was desired by God. It's just an incredible medrash. Okay. The whole thing has to do with the idea of this woman, of Tzipora, the whole thing. The first thing that said at the burning bush, right? What's that in your hand? A staff, right? Oh, that's the staff you took out, right? So you could marry this woman. And then it says, stand here with me. Yes, separate yourself from a woman and stand here with me. And now, what the Ben Yehoyada says, Okay, first he says, don't come any further. Right? Like you said, the burning bush. Nirala basaka da'atkaki means the Avodah Zarah, Ovdei Avodah Zarah Tawanim, idolaters argue, and see if someone can get this. Someone said it last week, actually. Shakadosh Baruch Hu meirov gedulato. God is so great. Eino mashgiach v'tachtonim. He doesn't care about what happens down here. Achavo yefsa pihem. It's just, they're just... God, people are just talking and spitting out nonsense. God doesn't care about what happens down here. Remember we had that last week when we asked the idea of going through an intermediary? Because he said that the Rambam said people thought you can't pray to God. He's so great, you have to go through the intermediaries, right? So there was a belief both in idolatrous realms. Before maybe there was idolatry, they believed that God is so great, he can't go through intermediaries. Also, the philosophers like Aristotle believed that God is so great, he doesn't care about what goes down here. All he cares about the general idea of existence. He doesn't care about particulars. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about you by name. He cares about maybe mankind. He doesn't care about little you. Aristotle believed that as well, because that's imperfect to care about. He believes in the species, the idea of the human being, that's a more perfect category. You and I, we're all flawed. He doesn't believe in that. But the idea of man, that's something else. So Aristotle believed that. So here, he says that they didn't believe that God would, the idolaters, God had come down to earth and really cares. And this now shut up such people. So he showed, this verse showed, it's not true, what do you mean? Remember the verse that shows that God came down into the burning bush, as it were, and even on the thorns he came down upon. He did care, he did come down. So they were saying to the son of Manasseh, they were saying, how could you go worship idols and you believe like they do that, oh, because God is so far away, he doesn't care. What are you talking about? You saw that God came down to Moshe Rabbeinu, to your grandfather. How could you think otherwise? And then Ba'odam Rulo, they also said, don't you come from Moshe? Don't you come from Moshe? Dichtiv Bei Maza Biyadcha. It says there, what's in your hand, and what was in the hand of the staff, which became a snake, right? Now, what is the snake a symbol of? Now, he says, Ve'echatat yeshamish l'avodazara, shehi gunda denachash. I guess the avodazara is related to the snake. The snake is the one who led the people aside from worshiping God in the first place in Gan Eden. But I'll take it even further. Okay, Dr. Sarna, in one of his writings, says that in ancient Egypt, this is not known to everyone, not even to us, the snake represented, he said, the patron cobra goddess of Lower Egypt. Imagine the cobra, you could imagine that would be a snake. And he says that they have evidence that this was worn over the forehead on the headdress of the pharaohs of Egypt, the cobra. Okay?
Yeah.
It was emblematic of divinely protected sovereignty, and it also served as a menacing symbol of death to any enemies of the crown. You know, if you attack this, you got the cobra to deal with. You got the snake to deal with. So he says that that also is what he was telling him. He says, that's Avodah Zarah, the idea of the snake. And remember Moshe, your grandfather? He grabbed the snake. God said, grab the snake. You can control the snake. You can control Pharaoh. You can control that Avodah Zarah. Okay? So you're now going to go and you're going to go worship these idols? How could it be? These were the questions they were asking him. And nonetheless, he went ahead, he said, look, I'm really, whether you, he did it, or he said, I'm just doing it for money, or even if he's really not doing it, to Shem of Odozara, it's a terrible Chil Hashem, obviously Maris Ayin, as we say, it looks terrible, it's, everyone thinks he's doing it, the idea is such a faker, he's not even a Kohen.